This is The Producers, a podcast. The biggest names in audio production, station sound, radio imaging, branding, and voiceover. Interviews, tips, tricks, advice. To be a part of the show, visit RyanOnTheRadio.com. Now, The Producers with Ryan Dreen.
Hey, here we are again, Producers Podcast. Thanks, as always, for checking it out. And I will say thanks for all the emails that I get and the nice comments that I get. It makes it absolutely worth it. I had multiple in the last couple weeks, I'd say, multiple emails from young folk, talking college age folk that I hadn't heard from before, that were either in college radio or looking to possibly get into radio, but definitely, 18, 19 year olds that find value in the podcast because they get to hear from all the super talented and the big time pros. You know, that's good. But also, I think they're actually learning something that will help them get either a job or form a career. So it makes it all worth it. And I'm just pulling together my list here. I will not go into too much crap in this intro. I'll dive right into the Ian Sturgeon interview, as hopefully that's why you have come to this episode, because Ian's one of my favorite people, super nice guy, really talented, and as far as making effects, as I think I wrote in the intro, or I'm sorry, in the on the post on the website, super creative, but he gives you quantity and quality and value. So basically, you don't pay a lot of money and you get a ton of content, and it's good content from Ian. That's always the top of my mind when I think of Big Fish Worldwide and the stuff that he does. So we've been friends now for quite a while, and I actually had forgotten, but I'm going to kick things off with his Big Fish Work Parts Volume 5 demo. I believe that I'm on there. I had forgotten. That was a long time ago that he asked me to cut a line for him. So anyway, always funny stuff coming from Ian. We'll hear that in a minute. I do want to make mention in the intro, or he wanted me to make mention, that the first 10 people to email him or contact him in some way on his website, bigfishworldwide.com, and just mention this podcast, Ryan on the Radio, or the podcast, the blog, however you want to say it, you will get a free month of Big Fish Work Parts. And that's for 10 people, the first 10 people that contact him in reference to this. I also put a note on the website, so you may as well contact him. And, if you're not one of the 10, maybe he'll hook you up with something. But also, when I did the interview, I just sort of said, hey, man, why don't you give stuff away for free? But seriously, Ian's always good about promoting what he does, so I knew he would. But I asked for like 5 free work parts for everyone, and he actually gave me 20 free work parts to give away. So all you have to do is just go to the post on my website, RyanOnTheRadio.com. Depending on what point in time you're reading this, it's either right there on the main page linked, right in the middle of the main page, or this could be down the road. Just search for Ian Sturgeon, search for Big Fish. Either way, this post will come up either at the top or near the top. And it'll have instructions on how to grab the free zip file full of 20 effects work parts from Ian and Big Fish. All right, have I said enough about all that? I believe that I have. Why don't we just make with the interview, huh? Here's the demo for Big Fish Work Parts Volume 5 from the one and only Ian Sturgeon. This is a two-parter. I'll jump back on to the back end of part two and tell you what else I got going on the website, future guests, etc. Thanks.
One, two.
Just when you thought the creators of Big Fish Work Parts probably couldn't count past 4, they shocked the world. By coming out with another imaging package. Introducing Big Fish Work Parts Volume 5.
Here's what people are saying about Big Fish.
I used to use tracks from the keyboard cat on YouTube to image my radio station. Music beds from Big Fish 5 are at least as good, if not better.
If I have to choose between banging rocks together to make impacts and using Big Fish 5,
yeah, I choose Big Fish almost every time.
I've heard lots of packages that are not as good as Big Fish 5. Probably.
I haven't been this happy with a product since I bought my first shake weight.
Big Fish Work Parts, Volume 5. Buy it now and get ready to change your life.
There is the demo from one of the many, many brilliant products from my good buddy and our current guest, Ian Sturgeon. Big Fish Worldwide is the company. That's the Big Fish Work Parts Volume 5 demo. Blah, blah, blah more. But now he is Ian. Hey, man, thanks for your time, dude. I appreciate you doing the interview.
Yeah, no trouble at all. I'm glad to be here. Or I'm in my studio, but, you know.
I was going to say, yeah. We're glad to be in the comfort, and your studio is in the comfort of your own home, right?
Actually, it's not. I've decided that my wife talked to me too much if I was at my house. So I got a little studio here in my little town, and
that's cool.
How I'm doing things now, so.
Oh, nice. Have you been in that for a while then? Have you had your own place for a while?
Yeah. It just kind of, it's easy to get distracted when you're, you know, and I'm sure a lot of people face that when they work from their home studio, when you're, you walk through the house to get a drink of water, and then all of a sudden you've got a million things to do that, you know, so it's, it's good to just have a place to go hide, get your chunk of work done, and then come back home and be a husband and a dad and all that stuff. So.
Yeah. Well, that's great. You're a Colorado guy. Are you still in Colorado?
Yep. Still in Colorado. Yep. Just a couple of hours south from Denver. That's one of my favorite things about technology is that I get to live wherever I want. So yeah, it's been good.
Well, nice. Well, I appreciate it. I think most people listening to this episode will know you more as a, you know, a sound designer. I'm assuming most people listening to this will know you from Big Fish Worldwide, releasing those kinds of products that imaging producers use. But you've actually done a lot of different things. So let's dive into your background a little bit. Tell me how you started working with sound, whether it be as an imaging producer or creating sound design elements. You know, how did you get started?
Sure. Yeah. Basically, when I was a high school kid, I watched the movie Private Parts with Howard Stern. And decided I wanted to be the next shock jock until I got to, I went through, you know, a few broadcasting classes at college and got some on-air experience and realized fairly quickly that I sucked at being on air. So anyway, so I did some college projects that I just kind of, you know, it was just fun stuff that we recorded and felt really good about the production side of things. And I was going to a small school in Pueblo, Colorado, University
USC.
Of Southern Colorado. And I decided, you know, I want to get some major market experience sort of stuff. So I moved up to Denver and started helping out with their online radio station up there. And this guy came to one of our meetings and was you know, acting like he knew everything and stuff. And he was kind of making me mad because at that point I knew the most about radio in the room. And so I was like, you know, who are you? And it came to be that he was Roger Keeler of KTCL.
I figured that's who you'd say.
So I felt really dumb when because I was a huge fan of his work. I was starting to listen to promos on the radio and think like, wow, that was really funny. That engaged me. That's, you know, because I was thinking that imaging might be something that I wanted to do. And after the meeting, he didn't have money to pay for parking. So I told him I'd pay for his parking if he'd give me an internship. And that's where I started getting my experience with production. Because before that,
are you telling me that Keeler actually had a car at that point?
Yeah, right. It was the middle of winter. So he was driving a car at that point. So and that was great. Like Roger Keeler lives in Colorado because he wants to live in Colorado. He could be anywhere he wanted to be. And so it was so cool to have somebody that was passionate about radio imaging. It wasn't like it was an afternoon guy that also did imaging, that it was also the music director, you know. And he loved making audio, you know, and at the time it was funny because I just wanted to image radio stations, and he was talking about how he made his own sound effects, and I was like, well, that's stupid, just buy them, you know. And then Well, I should say, you know, I worked with Roger forever. He taught me so much about production, and I basically hung out in his studio until I was a burden, and he kicked me out. So, mm-hmm. In a nice way, he gave me gave me some stuff to get me started, and kicked me out, and said, "Hey, go work for a radio station, or go work for the promotions department. Get your feet wet in radio." And did that, and just kept on bugging my. And then after that, I got a job at KVU in Colorado Springs, and still doing on air stuff and. Not very well. I literally almost got fired for being really bad at running the board. And then one, I kept on bugging the PD and saying, "Hey, check out my production demo," you know. And finally, the imaging girl stopped. She quit, and they were like, "What are we gonna do?" And so they gave me a studio with unlimited access, which not very many people get anymore. And from there, I think I got paid for 30 hours a week of work. And I was there probably 60 to 80 hours a week. I just lived in the studio, and, it'd take me 2 hours to do the perfect sweeper, you know, whatever. I would just geek out over all the new toys and, really go after it. And that's really where I got to have a bunch of experience. So it was great.
And so from there, then, move ahead to where you were sort of. Your first, major that, full time, this is my career. You know, I know at one point you came to Dallas. So where were some of the big jobs at that point? Or when did you go on your own and actually start your company and make money, your full time salary like that?
Right. So I kind of went about things completely backwards. I'm the type of person that if I am passionate about something, I just delve into it. I mean, I just go all in with it. So I figured, I've been imaging a radio station for like 2 years. I might as well start an imaging company, right? For starters, I was commuting from Denver to Springs to do this, so I was like, I can't do this anymore. It's a waste of time to be driving. So I'm going to start my own company, and KVU is going to be my first client. So, I started imaging them and some other stations in New Jersey and, different places like that. I did some work with A.J. Bilger, who people know from Audio Chop Shop and Audio Bit Exchange and all that stuff. But did some freelance work for him at some fairly major market stations, KRBE in Houston, and which some of these stations may not even know I worked for him. But
I know that's how it works with a lot of those type services.
Yeah. So anyway, did a lot of work, just freelance stuff, and then I was too poor to buy sound effects. I was broke, so because as many know, it's pretty hard to make a living freelancing stations, and so especially when you're just starting out. So. I was pretty broke and I didn't have sound effects, so I started making them. And I had my friend who's great at websites make a website where you could go and discover me as a freelance talent. And then, oh yeah, we have these sound effects we're giving away. And literally thousands of people were downloading those sound effects. So I was like, whoa, maybe I could sell this stuff. And and that's where it all started. So really, I started doing less imaging and more sound design, and that's how Big Fish started. And
About what year are we talking about where this sort of this transition, this major transitional moment is happening?
Yeah, this is 2005, I believe, okay. When this was, maybe a little earlier, maybe 2004, yeah, somewhere in there. Yeah.
I discovered you as Big Fish in, I think, 06-ish.
Yeah.
And then you almost immediately came to Dallas, which is where I am.
Right.
And, don't talk too long about that gig because I want to talk a lot more about your sound design talents. But, tell me about the Dallas gig. And I remember what you told me at the time, but just tell me about that gig.
Okay. So really, I another way of doing things sort of backwards, I was imaging all these radio stations, or I imaged all these radio stations on a freelance basis. And then I was friends with this guy named Kenny Hobbs, who was imaging imaging in Dallas at KZPS and KDMX down there. Mm-hmm. And so he was making an exit from there, but just loved my stuff. And so I said, I've always wanted this major market gig. And so we just started talking, and I started sending them stuff, and they liked it. And so headed down to Dallas for a while. So, and that was, you know, that was really great while it lasted. And then, there was some format changes and things like that. And, so we ended up, I ended up, not being in Dallas very long. I was only there for about a year. But, you know, came back to Colorado and continued to make funny sounds in my little studio. So,
and I think at the time you had sort of also said it was really, you felt like you maybe needed to validate yourself as just getting that imaging gig in the major market. And then it was, you know, you were happy you did it. You were pleased with your work, but then you realized, you know, let's just go back to what I need to be doing, which is the Big Fish products kind of, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's, for some reason, I've been blessed with this weird talent to make usable, funny sounds, you know, and you know, I keep on thinking I'm going to wake up some morning and there's going to be, you know, 100 other guys doing it and I won't be able to sell anything anymore, but, people keep buying stuff. So I keep making it. So, yeah.
Cool. I'll ask you a question that was sent in from Brian Whitaker. Really digs Ian's effects, of course. He's wondering if you also freelance stations as well, and if so, can you name some? So the reason I ask this now is, have you gone 100% into the sound design world, making beds and noises, or do you still freelance radio station imaging?
You know, it's rare that I freelance a station. It happens, but it's very rare. And usually if I do something like that, it'll be for a small station that I'll also like do some voice for or something. Yeah. But that is super far, few and far between. Most everything I do is sound design. But what I do like to do is I do prefab sweepers for a lot of other sound design places. Mm-hmm. Occasionally. And so it keeps me understanding what effects work in sweepers and, you know, to know that I'm just not, you know, making weird sounds for the sake of making weird sounds. Like they're still usable and they're still, you know, I still use them in sweepers. So I understand what still works and stuff. So I love doing that. And I wouldn't change that because I think it keeps me sharp as an imaging guy versus just some weird guy that plays with his computer all day. So
I'm going to ask this now, even though it doesn't fit in perfectly well. But it's just something I'm really curious about. I use your sound design elements all the time. I use you on 360 Country. You know, I mean, I literally employ you. But when you make the sweeper elements, so shells, when you're actually making these shells, are you making a sweeper with them? You know, using like coming, you know, writing copy, producing them around voice. And that's how you know they work, or do you just make them and hope that voice will eventually work with these elements?
So basically, when I'm making a sweeper shell, most of the time there's occasionally like, well, let me back up. So when I make a sweeper, usually I think like, how is this going to be the easiest for another producer to put some call letters on or a positioning statement on? And use it like right away. And so, I'll lead into something that's, that like doesn't have lead into it with something that doesn't have a beat under it or anything. It's like a drone. It's like a rising drone or wipe, and then go into, beat driven listeners or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then come out of it and have a space to end it with something as well. So, so people can, you know, they go back and forth these days on how much you really need to say the positioning statement, the call letters, whether they should be together or not. They can sort of pick and choose where they're going to put that stuff in, but it's really easy to put in. And the, you know, the rest of the stuff sounds super smooth. Like you know, spent an hour on it in the studio. So, somebody can just pick it up and throw what they need to into it and, just get on with their life. So
Let me stay on this topic. I'll get back to more specific sound design and other business related stuff. But you pay a ton of attention to tempo. It's something I've talked about a lot. It's something, you know, much more talented producers than me have talked about a lot in relation to radio imaging. But how much focus how much attention are you focusing on tempo when producing these more fully produced elements, i.e. sweeper shells that use listener voices or artist elements and that kind of thing?
Yeah. Everything I do is super beat driven. Like I don't start or end anything like not on a one or a four beat. And I've that's my style. And so, yeah. when there's a listener in a sweeper, it's almost like a song. And, if it doesn't fit, I get another listener. Like, everything is very beat driven and flows along and it sucks you in 'cause you're used to listening to music. And so, you're going along and you're listening to something and it makes sense 'cause it's on beat and then it stops down on a one beat or something like that and your brain goes, whoa, what was that? You know, or something's cut out on a four beat and you're like, your brain says, huh, I just heard like some part of a song just dropped out, and they key in on something and they listen to it. And so it's just the way our brain works. Once we hear a beat, it draws us in. And now, and so everything I do is based on that. So
You weren't using Pro Tools ever when I knew you before. Have you ever switched over? Are you still on Audition?
I'm still on Audition, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know Audition well enough. Does Audition have some sort of a grid mode? Do you ever work in any form of a grid mode?
So, I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of stuff I don't know about Adobe Audition, but I started out using even CoolEdit Pro, and I started beat mixing with that. And so you go into like loop properties, and it's weird because you have to understand how music works at a basic level to do that. So everything you do has to be turned into a loop, and then you can adjust the loop properties as it goes. It's a little bit easier now because you can just click on the edge and drag it and stretch it in time and stuff. But still, if it's not in a loop, it's not going to be perfect. So so if you just drag you can drag a beat and slow it down or speed it up, but if it's not specifically made into a loop, it's going to be a little bit off. And so I work really hard to make everything, you know, flow and match up in tempo and go into those loop properties. And basically you have to know how many measures measures are in there and then adjust it. You know, you'll say four beats per measure at 120 beats per minute, and then it'll adjust it to that. So a little bit of the long way to do things.
Yeah, but essentially, from what I understand, Audition does not have a grid mode as we know it in Pro Tools. Again, I don't use it. But I was only curious because I know you pay a lot of attention to tempo, so I thought maybe you would work in, you know, with everything locked in like that, but it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like you're using your ear and then some of the tools that the program has a lot more than you're using, you know, snapping things to grids, et cetera.
Yeah, no, it's all like, you know, picking out a beat you think is cool and then stretching it and beat mixing it to fit and all that. And I'm fast at that because I started out with CoolEdit Pro and, you know, doing things the long way. And I mean, literally just spending hours upon hours in the studio going through menus and trying to figure out how in the world people beat mix stuff. And so, so I figured that out. And then from there, it just got, I got fast at it because I was infatuated with it. So.
So as you said, sometime in the last, few years, I'm guessing it was in the neighborhood of 07 ish that you transitioned back to Colorado and you also transitioned back to doing sound design production more heavily. Is that about the right era?
Yeah. Yep. 2007. Yeah. July 2007. So
I guess you can decline to answer, but I'm really curious as far as how much work you're doing and the kind of money you're making. Now, you don't have to tell me specific numbers, I guess, because some people don't like to talk about that, but are you a wealthy man? Are you comfortable? You have your own outboard studio. You know, what kind of dollars are you making? And then what kind of work are you doing?
Okay, so I do a lot of piece work and all my Big Fish stuff is buyout. And so if I was going to like, if there was like an aspiring sound designer out there and, you know, they wanted to come out, they were about to come out with this killer package, I would say, you know, find a way to do it barter because you're going to make a lot more money. And so I don't even think I understood barter when I came out with Big Fish. And it was very like, hey, let's charge a little bit of money and see if people buy this. And people bought it, but I didn't make a lot of money. And so, but on the other side of things, it made a name for me in the industry as well. So like, if for some reason this guy with a really crappy studio out in Colorado was that my stuff was on every major market in, you know, in the US. And so, so even though it was, I wasn't making a whole bunch of money, everybody in the industry knew my name and knew who I was. And so, so that was good. It was good exposure and things like that. But honestly, you know, you do a lot of piecework and you're not, you know, you're not making the same amount as some of the other, sound design agencies that are doing things through barter and doing it that way. It's a lot, it's pretty hard to do barter and it takes a while. And, so because of that jump, the people that stick with that and really make the jump and do that, they make quite a bit more money. So, to answer your question, you know, I don't have a pool in my backyard. But I do okay. And I, you know, I stay busy, and as I, the more I'm in the industry, I get faster and I can create more products. And so, I pay my bills and get to live where I want and I'm happy. So.
Okay. And then, maybe break it down like this too. Cause I know people, I mean, look, at the end of the day, you know, we are still working, you know, we're doing this for money and people are curious, you know, what type of dollars people get. But, what is the most lucrative thing you do?
The most lucrative thing I do, you know, it's hard to say because I have just like, standards on like how much I charge for stuff or whatever. So, I mean, sound design in general, and I'm trying to get to the point where, I mean, there's two ways of doing things. Like I can make X amount of widgets for 360 Country or some other sound design company and, get paid X amount of dollars. Right. Or I can make stuff for Big Fish or make another small sound design package and that I own completely and I can sell it 100 times. And so obviously that makes more financial sense than doing piecework here and there. But on the other hand, it keeps me busy and, I make a good wage doing it. So, so it's kind of a catch 22. Like, do I ditch all my clients that I do piecework for or you know, suck it up and just really market Big Fish? Or do I, you know, just, you know, I love it. So why switch it up? You know? It is sort of a struggle though to know, like, do I just really stick to my guns and only sell my own stuff or not? You know, I mean, it's like, I think about the battery companies that make Duracell batteries and also generic batteries, right? So like there's only a certain amount of stuff, people that are going to buy Big Fish because of whatever they think about the brand, but they'll also buy my stuff through another agency, you know, and I can still make money off of it. So
I do want to make sure I bring up your Big Fish updates. That, I mean, it's a great price. You know, I absolutely want to do a commercial for it right now, but, you know, is your client base, I guess I'm curious that it seems like that to me would be a very lucrative thing. Your price is very, very good, but I mean, I feel like you have a lot of clients and to just continue to build that up would be, like you said, to be just selling the same thing over and over.
Right.
And would be the best way to go about it.
Yeah. You know, and part of that is the struggle of being being your own boss and being everything, being your marketing guy, the guy that makes all the funny sounds, the guy that handles passwords, you know, I'm all of that. And so, so then at the end of the day, you're like, I haven't told anybody about myself in a long time. I guess I should put on my marketing hat, you know? And so, it's all choices of like, what do you think is going to make the most money? And sometimes getting bogged down in like the stupidity of, banging out, you know, pieces of sound design at maybe less than what you should be charging for it or whatever, you know, instead of marketing yourself and selling things over and over. But it's a balance, you know.
The producers.